Say me wine up the thing till it pile up. Big bumper girl just a wine and a oil up. They must spoil me a stock till it pile up. My money no, so it my
you
money.
Dance like you mean it. Dance like you on fire and you want me to know. You move like you mean it, shorty. See the look on your face. You either wanna fight or wanna make love, maybe both. They got me looking at you, watching the way you wind it and pop it. One more time, go wind and pop it, yeah, yeah. Remember that drink got me feeling alright. Pretty little thing, I could watch it all night. Pull up on that bumper, girl, I just might. Pull up on that bumper, girl, I just might. Baby, push back when I jump behind it. When I jump behind it. So when I jump behind it, push back on me. So baby, push back when I jump behind it. Baby, let me know you like it. Tonight, let's give them something to see. Everybody singing.
Bar, couple shots, no chasing. My booty amazing. Come on, baby, chase it. Back to the floor, give us space. And
looking at me, watching the way I wanted him pop it. One more time, I wanted him pop it, yeah. Baby, that drink got me feeling alright. Pretty little thing, you could watch me all night. Pull up on his bumper, boy, I don't mind.
Hello, welcome. This is Marco. You're listening to Ask the Talk on CITR 101.9. So there's a lot to talk about, always in astronomy, because it's about the universe, and we're in the universe. So we are always talking about astronomy, even if we don't know it. So look at this, a cosmic mudball meteorite. I wonder what that's all about. You know what? I don't really care. There's a second interstellar comet that has visited in our solar system. Astronomers know where it came from. First one called Oumuamua, something like that. It's a Hawaiian name, something like visitor or I don't know the exact translation, but I guess if one interstellar comet came through our solar system, why should we worry about the next one? Just a piece of rock, and it's not going to affect us. Okay, so there's lots of stories, and what one will I get to about the gassy Milky Way? Why is the Milky Way galaxy getting so gassy? So what do they mean that by that? What is the Milky Way? Why is the Milky Way getting so gassy? So the subtitle says here, there seems to be an imbalance in our galaxy. I don't know why that's a question. I never would have thought that the Milky Way was getting too gassy, but let's read about this article. Okay, it's on livescience.com or space.com. It was 5 days ago, and actually, it's in livescience.com in cooperation with space.com. So one of the reasons I switched lately to science.com or space.com, it's kind of interesting. NASA's really interesting, but these are off the road topics, something different. Like here, something weird is happening to the black hole at the center of our Milky Way. Okay. So they saw something now they haven't seen in 20 years. So they've been looking at the black hole at the center of our galaxy. So let me expound a bit when I talked about the Event Horizon Telescope. So that was to look at the Milky Way at the center of our galaxy, try to get a picture of it. You're not going to get a picture of the black hole at the center of our Milky Way. So you won't get a direct picture of the black hole. You just get a dark area. But I think they were concentrating on the gas that is swirling around the black hole. And I didn't realize it at that time, but after watching this program, it's really quite complicated from the beginning because you have to get your computer program to process your data. You have to get the right amount of data or the right data. And when they said how they got data from 8 different telescopes around the world, so they can join them, and it almost seems like there, you have a telescope with a cross-section of its lens that's as big as the Earth. So why don't they do that for other things? That would be interesting. You can gather a lot of light. But as I said, it was quite complicated. So what are we going to talk about today? How about starting with, I was just talking about something, and you know what? I clicked to see another page. Yeah, why is the Milky Way galaxy getting so gassy? So what I thought was, as time goes on, and stars like our sun, for example, they use up their gas, and then they go into their coma, or they go into their other, after they become red giants, and they die away, and blow out their outer atmosphere. There was apparently this theory that after all the stars die, there won't be enough gas to make new stars. But here it says the Milky Way is getting so gassy. So you need a lot of gas and dust in an interstellar cloud. Big clouds like light years across, very big, and quite a few stars are born in there. And we have an example now of our Orion, the nebula, the Great Nebula in Orion. I don't know how many light years across, maybe a couple thousand, but there's a lot of star formation going on there. I believe it's 1,500 light years away. And Betelgeuse is part of the Orion constellation. I think it's about 550 light years away. So I'm looking up that part of the sky, but as you know, we live in a city. You can just go across the border to Washington State, especially down in the valley, and all of a sudden the sky just lights up. So we're going to talk about why the galaxy is getting so gassy. And again, as I thought about it, I thought it was going the other way. The gas was getting used up, and eventually there won't be enough gas to make stars. And there was one galaxy that was dead, so the gas was being sucked out of it, and no one knew why. So here we're going to talk about why the Milky Way is getting so gassy. We're not talking about upset stomach or taking Rolaids. Let's see what this article says. This illustration shows gas rising and falling out of the Milky Way galaxy using Hubble's COS instrument. With 10 years of data from COS, astronomers have found that there is more gas coming into our galaxy than leaving it. So my guess would be the Magellanic Stream. We're ripping apart the Magellanic Clouds, the dwarf galaxies that are part of our local group. And apparently the Milky Way is wreaking havoc on these galaxies, ripping them apart. So as they rotate around the Milky Way, they're getting shredded apart. So is it the Magellanic Stream? We'll see. Okay, again, this article is why is the Milky Way galaxy getting so gassy? Okay, astronomers have discovered a strange surplus of gas in the Milky Way galaxy. Using 10 years of data from Hubble Space Telescope, the team of astronomers concluded that there is more gas coming into our galaxy than leaving it. Okay, it's the third time they've said that. Rather than an equilibrium of gas entering and escaping, there is a significant imbalance, though the team behind this finding has not yet found the source for this gaseous disparity. Okay, so I'm thinking it has a picture here, and it shows gas is coming in many parts of the disk. So not just around the central, the center of it. And so if you go to this article, if you care about astronomy, why is the Milky Way galaxy getting so gassy? So it's on space.com. So today is the 17th of October. So it would be October 12th. And the researchers used data from, there it goes, an acronym printed out in full, Hubble's COS, which is Cosmic Origins Spectrograph, which allows the space telescope to study objects that absorb or emit light and determine aspects such as their temperature, chemical makeup, velocity, and density. I love spectrometers. Remember in first year chemistry, we did we worked with a spectrometer and tried to guess what kind of gas was in there. So spectroscopy is such a cool thing. And with COS, the team could observe and track the movement of gas. So I guess everybody listening knows what spectroscopy is. They see the light, the photons jump in between the energy levels in an atom, and they absorb light if they jump from a lower level to a higher level. And when they, like a planet orbiting, and then when they jump from a high level to a lower level, they emit light, and they can track the wavelengths of light emitted or absorbed. With COS, the team could observe and track the movement of gases in the galaxy. The gases appear redder as they move away from our galaxy and bluer as they get closer through the phenomena known as redshift and blueshift. If you think back, so many cool discoveries in science, like redshift and spectroscopy and blueshift. Pretty cool. And there's a related story here. Maybe I'll read it later, but it says, giant gas cloud surrounds our Milky Way galaxy. So could that be the Magellanic Stream? Well, we'll see. So they look at the redshift of the blueshift of the gas of the spectrograph, the graph. This allowed the researchers to see that there was more blue gas, which is entering, than red, exiting. Although the researchers have not pinpointed the source of this imbalance, they think that it could possibly be caused by one of three things. So now if we think of it, these researchers have been working on this for 10 years. I would assume there's more than one researcher, so they get grants, pay their salary, use the telescope. If you think of it, there's a lot of money going into this stuff, isn't it? Someone's spending it, so I think a lot of it is by grants. So anyway, first, the astronomers think that this excess gas could be coming from the interstellar medium. Second, they suggest that the Milky Way is using its impressive gravitational pull to swipe gas from smaller nearby galaxies, according to a statement. So that is the Magellanic Stream, I would suppose. But let's go back to the first thing. The first thing I read. First, the astronomers think that this excess gas could be coming from the interstellar medium. Well, I thought the interstellar medium was the space between stars. So I thought the interstellar medium refers to the space between, like, say, us and the next nearest stars or the other stars. So that's in the galaxy. It's not coming in and out of the galaxy. It's already in the galaxy. So I'll think about that and see what they say. Additionally, seeing as the study considered only cool gases, researchers think the hotter gases might also contribute to this finding. Gases leave our galaxy when events like supernova and stellar winds push them out of the Milky Way's galactic disk. When gases fall back into our galaxy, they contribute to the formation of new stars and planets. So the balance between the inflow and outflow of gases is important to regulating how objects such as stars form in galaxies like ours. So again, I thought before reading this article, I just naturally assumed that gas is being used up. So for example, our star is using up gas. And other stars that will eventually blow out into supernova, they'll release elements out into the interstellar medium and they could release gases. But they're using a lot of gas when they're burning through their core, when they burn the gas in their core and fuse it. Did that make sense? I don't know. Okay. Now let's see what Philip Richter of the University of Potsdam. So let me go over that statement again. What did I just say? Okay. When the stars are burning their gas in their core before they go supernova, they're forming new elements. So I suppose they're just burn up gas, like, for example, hydrogen, and fusing it to make helium. So they make helium gas. Or maybe they make, it's an ash core, I think they say. Okay, it's an ash core. So maybe they're using gases and making an ash core. So that's what I thought the process was. We're losing gas, but here we're gaining gas. Okay, so gases leave our galaxy when events like supernovae and stellar winds push them out of the Milky Way's galactic disk. When gases fall back in, they contribute to the formation of new stars and planets. So says, okay, now I'm going to read this person's quote, Philip Richter of the University of Potsdam in Germany, end quote, studying our galaxy in detail provides the basis for understanding galaxies across the universe, and we have realized that our galaxy is more complicated than we imagined, end quote. Didn't learn much there. The research will be published in a study in the Astrophysical Journal. So if you want to find out why our Milky Way is losing gas, go to this article. No, gaining gas. So why is the Milky Way galaxy getting so gassy? So I think that's an important question, because I've heard before how much we're going to burn all our stars and eventually there'll be no gas left. Okay. So here's another person, a Nobel laureate. And you know what this Nobel laureate says? Humans will never live on another planet. And here's why. So this is on livescience.com. And it's by a writer 3 days ago. So it's October the 14th. And again, the title, livescience.com. Humans will never live on another planet, Nobel laureate says. And here's why. Well, I thought they will, but let's see what happens. Here's the reality. We're messing up the Earth, and any far-out ideas of colonizing another orb when we're done with our own are wishful thinking. That's according to Michael Mayer, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, an astrophysicist who was a co-recipient of the Nobel Prize in Physics this year for discovering the first planet orbiting a sun-like star outside of our solar system. So says, or he told French press, and quote, if we are talking about exoplanets, things should be clear. We will not migrate there, end quote. He said he felt the need to kill all the statesmen that say, okay, we will go to a livable planet if one day life is not possible on Earth. So he says we're not going to do it. And one of the scenarios that I've heard about is, if we send somebody to the nearest star, which is 4.3 light years away. So we send someone there. And it's going to take a long time. So what will happen is, I think we're going to have to put them in some kind of deep sleep. When they get there, then they're going to wake up and they're going to have to live off that planet or live off the land. So I don't think they're coming back unless they invent new technology. So what's cool about science is, with science fiction, you can create and fabricate all kinds of scenarios. And here's one. They're going to go and they have to change their genes in order to survive on this new alien planet. They're going to become part human, part, let's say, lizard. And then they're going to come back and kill us all. So there might be a war. So that's not a good idea, is it? So there's some scenarios where they think one day the technology will be there. But I've always thought about this, about rockets. Like rockets, if nothing goes wrong mechanically, they just go in a straight line. Why are they that stable? Why don't they just flip out and burst apart? So if you're traveling to close to the speed of light, what's going to happen to your spaceship? But I don't think you could travel close to the speed of light. So anyway, he's saying we can't go colonize another planet. Maybe Mars, but not an exoplanet. So hear what he says. All the known exoplanets or planets outside of our solar system are too far away to feasibly travel to. And this is what he says in quotes. Even in the very optimistic case of a livable planet that's not too far away, say a few dozen light years, which is not a lot, it's in the neighborhood, the time to get there is considerable. So to travel through our solar system, to the edge of the solar system, the Voyagers took, 40 years just to get to the edge of our solar system. So yeah, we're going to have to invent some kind of technology. All of the known exoplanets or planets outside of our solar system are too far away to feasibly travel to. So a few dozen light years away, it's going to take a long time to get there. Mayer shared half the Nobel Prize this year, along with Didier Quiloz for discovering the first exoplanet in October 1995, using novel instruments at the Haute-Provence Observatory in southern France. They detected a gas giant similar to Jupiter, which they named 51 Pegasi b. The other half of the prize was awarded to James Peeple of Princeton University, a Canadian, for his work in dark matter and dark energy. Since then, over 4,000 other exoplanets have been found in the Milky Way, but apparently none of them can be feasibly reached. So here's another scenario. Let's say some aliens land on our Earth and they say, we'll take you to this other world. Wow, wouldn't that be cool? That is far away. They might have a technology that can get us there quicker. So Stephen Kane, a professor of planetary astrophysics at the University of California in Riverside, agrees with Mayor. And quote, he says, the sad reality is that at this point in human history, all stars are effectively at a distance of infinity, Kane told Life Science. We struggle very hard as a species to reach the Earth's moon, end quote. So yes, it would be a difficult thing. So you know what? We can think about it. Why not think about, let's go to another exoplanet. Why not? And while we're thinking about that, we'll go for a break. So we're thinking now, can we go to another exoplanet? That is really a difficult thing. And the only thing we can do now maybe is go to Mars, but that's still like 20 years in the future. So maybe in the first trip to Mars, it would take 6 months to a year to get there. In the first trip, they might just circle Mars and then come back. So it's possible we're not going to get to Mars for another 50 years. So stuff that could never have been imagined by other generations, like 100 years ago, 200 years ago, we are imagining them now, but they're still in the imagination phase. We're not going to suddenly spread all this technology and fly off to another world. Okay, so I am going to go for a break now. And when we come back, we're going to talk about more cool astronomy stuff. This is Marco. You're listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9.
This is going out to the whole wide west side. Know what I'm saying? Yeah. Break it down for me. Steady mopping, rock, rock on. I was just a young boy living in the hub city. Eastside Compton. Back in the days when Ice Cube and Easy had every talking about, boy, you can't.
This is Marco. You're listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9 on the west side at UBC. Too short, bumped in every super's boat and told us all how to ride for the west coast. My music and let me where you at, throw your gloves in the air and wave them like you just don't care. From LA to the bay, what you say? All day, every day, any damn day. Take a look around, we got the whole world locked down. Now, baby, no, 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 don't stop, won't stop. Can't stop, ride or die. That's why I put it down for the west side.
Didn't seem that long ago.
Oh, no.
We were still in 40s out the liquor store.
Oh, no.
Mama started tripping, so it's time to go.
Out to the park with the locusts.
Everybody broke,
smoking roaches. DJ Quick was the had every claiming he was from the CPT.
Y'all remember?
One time tried to clown.
We had to burn this bitch on down. One time for my was in incarceration.
I blaze a dime with you, but having lots of patience.
Two times for my sisters at the county build.
I got some Westside love for all you ghetto children.
Three times for my that passed away.
I took some cool for you and pray for better days. One day everything's gonna be fine. But until that day, my only reply is Westside till I die.
In the air,
wave them like you just don't care.
From LA to the Bay, what you say?
All day, every day,
any damn day.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Nisiam, Nisiaya, Thinkum Queen Ansep, Hydra CM, Nisiam, Nisiaya, and the Skakuya, Tilitin, Homasqueam, Mustail.
Well-known pimp, narcotics king, big-time racketeer, back in full force.
This could be one of the big moments in your life. Don't make it your last.
Look, this thing might be bigger than even we think it is.
Do you need an upgrade to the soundtrack to your life? Perhaps a song from a film or a tune from TV? My name is Gap. Exploding Head Movies is here to give you sounds from the cinema, along with the songs that will be defining your future. Those forgotten classics that need a little rescue.
Yeah. Come on, baby. Come on. I won't let you down. Follow me.
Exploding Head Movies. Monday, 7 to 9 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Okay, welcome back. So we're going to talk now about going to Mars or going to another planet somewhere far away. And this is what this person says. Mayor at the University, Stephen Kane, a professor of planetary astrophysics at the University of California in Riverside. He said, we might be able to send people to Mars in the next 50 years, but I would be very surprised if humanity made it to the orbit of Jupiter within the next few centuries. Since the distance to the nearest star outside of our solar system is about 70,000 times greater than the distance to Jupiter, all stars are effectively out of reach. Well, you might say plenty of things seemed out of reach until we reached them, like sending aircraft on intercontinental flights. But in this case, the required physics to reach the stars, if it exists, is not known to us, and it would require a fundamental change in our understanding of our relationship between mass, acceleration, and energy. Well said. Also, this is what he said, in quote, so that's where we stand, firmly on the Earth, and unlikely to change for a very, very long time, end quote. Mayor told the French press, end quote, we must take care of our planet. It is very beautiful and still absolutely livable, end quote. Of course, that's very good. So we're not going to go to the stars for a long time, he says. Andrew Fracknoy, an emeritus chair of the astronomy department at Foothill College in California, agreed that we won't be able to travel to these stars in the near future. But he says, and quote, I would never say we can never reach the stars and possible habitable planets. Who knows how our technology will evolve after another million years of evolution, end quote. So, of course, it's all our dream, and, you know, we see these movies, Star Wars, those are the best movies. And a lot of kids are wearing NASA t-shirts and talking about this. So I think astronomy is just an intriguing topic, and just to get to the moon required a Herculean effort. Now we're going to try to get to Mars one day. So, but these things keep getting delayed, like all these, like the James Webb Space Telescope, delayed. So who knows when the first people will go to Mars. And as I've explained, this is what I've heard, the first travel will be to get to Mars and only circle around it. So orbit Mars for a while, do some tests. And then if they go again 5 or 10 years later, then land on Mars. So there was something when I was watching, because it was 50 years since Neil Armstrong landed or stepped on the moon, and there was a lot of things that we weren't told as civilians. And one of them, when the astronauts went around the moon for the first time, when they got into moon orbit, they became extremely sick. NASA was considering canceling the flights, and the astronauts said, no. So just imagine going to the moon, getting there is a few days, being on the moon a few days, coming back. So you're about a week to 10 days. So there's not We've done it a few times, and even taken off on rockets. I think the first rocket that went to circle the moon, or people did not step on the moon, but when the rocket went around the moon, just launching from the rocket site, some of the astronauts got extremely ill, just vomiting like crazy, and their spacesuits, the whole capsule inside was just polluted. It was disgustingly dirty, and they had to put up with that. And I think all these times NASA has a side channel, which they speak to the astronauts, which civilians or news stations cannot pick up. So they asked these astronauts, do you want to cancel? They said no. So just going is incredibly challenging to the human body. And how can we go to Mars for 6 months or a year to get there, stay there a while and come back? You're going to be on a, like a year and a half or more mission. How can these astronauts put up with that? Pretty tough. Okay, next story would be from Live Science, and it's 2 days ago, so it is the 16th of October, and it says, faster than light travel could explain mysterious signals beaming through the cosmos. Okay, faster than light travel. But in that, the subtitle, it says, but don't worry, no laws of physics are being violated. So this reminds me of cosmic rays in our atmosphere. So some of these rays travel at the speed of light or close to the speed of light. And when we measure them from our reference frame, they kind of explode or go out of existence or do something before we think they should. So from their frame of mind, the cosmic rays, if they're alive, if they have a brain, I don't think they do, but because they're traveling close to the speed of light or at the speed of light, they perceive things differently. So they apparently explode or do something before we think they should. So when we're going on these trips, if we do go, if we travel at a fast rate, maybe the people on board, how will they be affected by that? Because we all know the paradox where an astronaut travels at the speed of light and the astronaut comes back to Earth and goes out, travels close to the speed of light, comes back, and the Earth has aged millions of years, where he's only aged a couple years. So interesting stuff to think about in this travel. Okay, so remember how many years, 40 to 50 years, it took the Voyager spacecraft just to travel to the edge of our solar system. So the nearest galaxy is 4.3 light years away. So imagine how long it would take to travel there at our present technology. Okay, so here's the article. Faster than light travel could explain mysterious signals beaming through the cosmos. In a distant corner of the universe, something is traveling faster than light. It has a picture here, and it says, green dots show the locations of 186 gamma ray bursts detected by the Large Area Telescope, LAT, over its first 10 years. New evidence suggests the odd signal showing up in these gamma ray bursts may be a sign that speeding jets of plasma are traveling faster than light in a medium. So let's read on and see what they say. So in a distant corner of the universe, something is traveling faster than light. No, the laws of physics aren't being violated. It's still true that nothing can travel faster than light in the vacuum of empty space. But when light travels through matter, like interstellar gas or a soup of charged particles, it slows down, meaning other matter might overtake it. And that may explain the weird symmetry in pulses of some of the most energetic light in the universe, called gamma ray bursts. So remember, they call this light. So if it's a gamma ray, it's light. If it's an X-ray, it's light. It just, we see visible light. We think, oh, light is just visible light. But no, they call all this electromagnetic, that's a good word, electromagnetic radiation light. So it says gamma rays are the most energetic light in the universe. These cryptic bursts, bright flashes of gamma ray light that come from faraway galaxies, form when massive stars collapse or when ultra-dense neutron stars collide. These cataclysms send speeding jets of hot charged plasma zooming through space. you can just imagine in our little boring world, which is the only place in the universe for life. We never travel more than we travel on a plane. The odd person in the military might travel like faster, but in a plane, how fast are we traveling? About 800 kilometers an hour. So all these vast distances like light years and these speeds, we're never going to attain it. They don't even register in our lives. So that's very interesting, I think. A gamma ray burst travels from a close speed of light. That's so cool that all these exotic events that happen around the universe, and we think it's so cool, but we're the coolest thing. We're life. So we're cooler than a gamma ray burst. So these cryptic bursts, bright flashes of gamma ray light that come from faraway galaxies, form when massive stars collapse or when ultra-dense neutron stars collide. These cataclysms send speeding jets of hot charged plasma zooming through space. But these signals have an odd symmetry, and the reason they do is still a mystery. A gamma ray burst doesn't brighten and dim in one steady peak, but instead in a flickering pattern, said John Hakila, an astrophysicist at the College of Charleston in South Carolina. Hakila has worked on this puzzle for years. Now he and a collaborator have a solution. Plasma traveling, both slower and faster than the speed of light, could explain this flickering pattern, as they report in a paper published September 23rd in the Astrophysical Journal. If they're right, it may help us understand what's actually producing these gamma rays. So said Dieter Hartmann, an astrophysicist at Clemson University, and quote, "I find it a great step forward," end quote. Wow, okay. That connects the small-scale phenomena in the plasma to our large-scale observations. In the last few years, Hakila has found that gamma ray bursts have small fluctuations in brightness on top of their overall brightening and dimming. If you subtract the overarching brightening and dimming, you're left with a series of smaller peaks, one primary peak with smaller peaks in brightness before and after. So let's read that again. If you subtract the overarching brightening and dimming, you're left with a series of smaller peaks, one primary peak with smaller peaks in brightness before and after. And this pattern is strangely symmetric. If you fold the pattern over the main peak and stretch one side, the two sides match remarkably well. In other words, the light pattern of a gamma ray burst pulse hints at a set of mirrored events. So says Aquila, and quote, "Whatever happened on the front side happened on the back side, and events knew to happen in reverse order." So this is kind of complicated. They're saying there's a bright peak, or there's a smaller peak in brightness before and after that one peak. So doesn't make much sense to me. Let's see if I can see a picture. So, there's no picture. They're just leaving us in the dark. Okay. So now they're talking about a relativistic image doubling. So, Nemiroff was studying, though astronomers don't know what causes gamma ray burst emission at the particle scale, they are fairly sure that it happens when jets of plasma traveling near the speed of light interact with surrounding gases. Hakila had been trying to come up with explanations for how these situations might make symmetric light pulses when he heard from Robert Nemiroff, an astrophysicist at Michigan Technological University. Nemiroff was studying what happens when an object travels through a surrounding medium faster than the light it emits. So the object is traveling faster than light, called superluminal motion. In previous research, Nemiroff had found that when such an object goes from traveling slower than light to faster than light, or vice versa, this transition can trigger a phenomena called relativistic image doubling. Nemiroff wondered whether this could account for the symmetric patterns Hakila found in gamma ray bursts. So what exactly is relativistic image doubling? So again, when I'm talking about this, I'm talking about the people, the few percentage that occupy the biggest brain space in the world. They will understand this, I think. Imagine a boat creating ripples as it moves across a lake towards the shore. If the boat travels more slowly than the waves it creates, a person standing on the shore will see the boat's ripples hit the shore in the order that the boat created them. But if the boat travels faster than the waves it creates, the boat will overtake the waves it creates, the first wave it creates, only to create a new ripple in front of that one, and so on. In that way, the new ripples created by the boat will reach the shore sooner than the first waves it created. Oh, I see. Okay. A person standing on the shore will see the ripples hit the shore in a time-reversed order. Okay. The same idea applies to gamma-ray bursts. If a cause of a gamma-ray burst is traveling faster than the light it emits through the gas and matter surrounding it, we would see the emission pattern in reverse chronological order. Okay. But what happened if the material was traveling slower than the speed of light, but then accelerated? What if it started fast and slowed down? In either case, we might see the emission both in chronological order and reverse chronological order right after one another, making a symmetric pulse pattern like the symmetric peaks observed in gamma ray bursts. So they went through all this article and they say the conclusion is there are still missing pieces to the puzzle. For one, researchers still don't know what's causing these bursts. But this proposed model gives researchers one small clue in the hunt to find the ultimate cause of gamma ray bursts. Okay, we're all much better for this article, aren't we? It's kind of spacey. It's kind of out there. Who knows what they're talking about? But these researchers spend a lot of time doing this stuff. So I'm going to go for a quick break. And no, I won't, because my show is going to end soon. So what's going to happen now? What's a hunter moon? October's full moon, called the hunter's moon, will rise tonight. Oh, that's a couple days ago, October 13, reaching its peak fullness at 5:08 p.m. Eastern time. The hunter's moon, which is the full moon following the harvest moon and the closest full moon to the fall equinox, is reportedly the best time for hunting deer and other animals. Oh, so that's why it's called a hunter's moon. And this is according to the Farmer's Almanac. In northern locations, leaves have fallen, deer have fattened, and harvesters have cleared the fields, making it easier to see the animals in the light of the big bulb in the sky, according to NASA. Okay, that's a hunter's moon. But people of different cultures and regions give their own names to full moons. The Algonquin tribes, for example, call October's full moon the travel moon, the dying grass moon, and the sanguine or blood moon. The latter three are thought to be named after the changing color of the leaves and dying plants, according to NASA. So we now know about a hunter's moon. So it makes it better to hunt. So that's why it's called a hunter's moon. Isn't that cool? So have you ever thought about why the universe has stopped making sense? Well, here's an article for you then. Stated 6 days ago, so that would make it last Saturday, which is October the 12th, and it says how the universe stopped making sense. So again, this is on livescience.com. We're getting something wrong about the universe. That's what the subtitle says. What are we getting wrong? Okay, Hubble Space Telescope image shows RS Puppis, one of the brightest Cepheids visible in our galaxy. Astronomers use stars like this to calculate the expansion rate of the universe. But they also use it to calculate distance to far-off things like galaxies and stuff like that. So we're getting something wrong about the universe, this article says. It might be something small, a measurement issue that makes certain stars look closer or farther away than they are. Something astrophysicists could fix with a few tweaks to how they measure their distance across space. It might be something big, an error or a series of errors in cosmology or understanding of the universe's origins and evolution. If that's the case, our entire history of space and time may be messed up. But whatever the issue is, it's making key observations of the universe disagree with each other. So measured one way, the universe appears to be expanding at a certain rate. Measured another way, the universe appears to be expanding at a different rate. And as a new paper shows, those discrepancies have gotten larger in recent years, even as the measurements have gotten more precise. So says Katie Mack, a theoretical cosmologist at North Carolina State University. And quote, we think that if our understanding of cosmology is correct, then all of these different measurements should be giving us the same answer. So I think some, end quote, I think some of the measurements they make is what is the expansion rate of the universe? So they use black holes, Cepheid variables, a lot of other things to measure, maybe things to do with dark matter or dark energy. So what are we talking about? I lost track because there's a thing that distracted me. How the universe stopped making sense. The two most famous measurements work very differently from one another. The first relies on the cosmic microwave background, CMB, the microwave radiation left over from the first moments after the Big Bang. Cosmologists have built theoretical models of the entire history of the universe on a CMB foundation, models they're very confident in and that would require an all-new physics to break out. That sounds like fun. And taken together, Max said, they produce a reasonably precise number for the Hubble constant, or H0, which governs how fast the universe is currently expanding. The second measurement uses supernovas and flashing stars in nearby galaxies, known as Cepheids. By gauging how far those galaxies are from our own and how fast they're moving away from us, astronomers have gotten what they believe is a very precise measurement of the Hubble constant, and that method offers a different H0. So wasn't it the Hubble constant that Einstein, is that the same constant that I, what did he call it, the cosmological constant? It could be the same thing. Okay, so says Mack, told Life Science. This is Professor Katie Mack from North Carolina State University. She's a theoretical cosmologist. Something that sounds like a lot of fun. If we're getting different answers, that means there's something that we don't know. So this is really about not just understanding the current expansion rate of the universe, which is something we're interested in, but understanding how the universe has evolved, how the expansion has evolved, and what space-time has been doing all this time, end quote. Pretty heady stuff. Wei Kang Lin, also a cosmologist at North Carolina State University and lead author of the paper, said that to develop a full picture of the problem, the team decided to round up all the different ways of constraining H0 in one place. The paper has not been formally peer-reviewed or published and is available on the preprint server ARXIV. Here's what constraining means. Measurements in physics rarely turn up exact answers. Instead, they put limits on the range of possible answers. And by looking at these constraints together, you can learn a lot about something you're studying. Well, that's cool, but that's for people who have giant brains, not for people like me who have pea-sized brains. So thank you for listening. We have been listening to Astro Talk, and we've been listening to professors talk about stuff that nobody seems to understand, because I sure don't understand it. So now what I got to do is I got to pull up magic, and I just did. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to put on music, and when I'm gone, you can listen to music. So thank you for listening. This is Marco. You have been listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9.